They are extraordinary things we're thinking about tonight, aren't they? What's Christmas really all about? Forget John Lewis's bouncing dog for a moment. Forget Aldi's Kevin the Carrot trying to dodge the dangerous rolling roast potatoes. Or Sainsbury's harassed commuter finally finding peace cloning himself after realising the greatest present is me. Good luck with that last line, by the way. I've been trying that one on my wife for years now. Haven't got anywhere. See past all that, though, to the things that we're thinking about, hearing about, singing about this evening. For many of us, I guess the danger is they seem so familiar. We've forgotten just how extraordinary they actually are. We've seen them reenacted in so many school nativity plays and portrayed on so many Christmas cards, and we've retold them as we've sung so many Christmas carols. Now they're a little bit like the fluoride they put in the water to protect our teeth. We're so used to it, we don't even realise it's there. So just try to imagine you're hearing about these things for the very first time. So many ancient promises coming together in one moment in time 2,000 years ago. A pregnant virgin. Angels. So many angels. Shepherds leaving their sheep, walking away from their livelihoods because they were so certain what they'd heard the angels say was true. Magi following a moving star from the east for miles. So extraordinary, you can see why some want to dismiss it as just an ancient fairy tale. The Harry Potter of the Roman world. So why is it we find it so hard to walk away from these things? Why is it that, here we are, 2,000 years later, still taking precious time out to remember them at this time of year? Turning up here at what, let's be honest, is a crazy time of night to pause and think about them again. Is it just that it is such a nice story, such an important part of our culture? Something that, sure, we don't want to ram down other people's throats, but we think deserves to be protected in this occasionally oversensitive multicultural age of ours? How are we meant to respond to these things? I wonder whether you noticed how in our first reading, Mary seems to point the way. I'll just turn back for a moment to that first reading, a few pages back in the service sheet. See what I mean? I can't help thinking Matthew must have had that thought in the back of his mind as he wrote this. He knew he was writing about remarkable things. Of course he did. So as he shows us Mary and how she responded, he does seem to be saying, here's how we should respond too. Poor Mary, we don't know what she was doing, maybe a bit of housework, when suddenly we're told her day was interrupted in the most surprising way. To be honest, most of us would welcome some kind of introduction when we're doing housework, but maybe not one like this. Turning round from the ironing and suddenly seeing an angel standing there. Because you see, we've got to forget the idea of angels as just sort of sweet little girls with wings or very well-groomed David Beckham lookalikes with wings. No disrespect to David Beckham, but the kind of word the Bible uses to describe the angels who were around when Jesus was born, they're military words. These aren't slightly shiny choristers we're talking about. These are great warriors of light. So no wonder the reading tells us, verse 29, Mary was greatly troubled. We would have been too. Nothing at all unusual about being scared by angels. People normally were. It's what happens next that is so striking. It's very quickly, three things to notice about Mary. First, how thoughtful she is in responding to what happens. I don't know about you, one of the things I'm often struck by is how many people seem to have this idea that Christian faith is an unthinking thing. It's about turning off our brain, sort of crossing our fingers, just hoping that something might be true. That's certainly how opponents of Christianity talk about it. So that what Mary does here in this unexpected encounter with the angel? Does she switch off her brain? If anything, notice she switches it on. Have a look, verse 29, beginning of the second paragraph. Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered. What kind of greeting this might be? She's wondering. That's a word for deep thinking. She's thinking deeply. And questioning too. So look at her, verse 34, next paragraph. Just after the angel has said she's going to have a baby. How will this be, Mary asked the angel, since I'm a virgin? That idea we sometimes have that 2,000 years ago, the trouble was everyone was so gullible, they just believed anything they were told. Not true. Mary may not have had to endure the excruciating embarrassment of sex education lessons at school, but she knew how these things worked. So she asks the rather obvious question, how? Again, that idea that faith is about just parking our questions and trying to ignore them. That if we've still got questions about these things, we can't really be the kind of people God would be interested in. That can't be true either. Read on. We'll see Jesus never shies away from questions. He puts himself right out there. He gets asked loads of them. He invites us to ask them too. If you could ask God one question and know it would be answered, what would it be? A little book we sometimes use here asks. What would your question be? Are you giving him a chance to answer? So Mary is thoughtful about these things. Second, notice how for her, coming to accept them takes a bit of time. Verse 29, we're told she's thinking, but very scared as suddenly she senses this divine force invading her life. Verse 34, maybe not quite so scared anymore, but still not there, still asking questions. But by verse 38 at the end, haven't things changed? Look at her. I am the Lord's servant, Mary answered. May it be to me as you have said. Fear, thinking, questioning. Faith. Okay, for Mary, it all happened in the space of one conversation, but even so, you can't help noticing Matthew seems to be deliberately showing us it didn't all happen just at once. I've been working for the church here for just over 12 years now, and one of the things I've been most struck by in this time is just how differently different people come to the point of giving their lives to Jesus and trusting him. Very occasionally, it is almost an instant thing. No interest. Someone hears about him, bang, they're in. Not often, though. Most people are very different. Maybe there is a strong emotion, fear, maybe anger at the beginning. What is this Christian thing? Lots of questioning along the way, pestering Christian friends. Why do you believe what you do? Only later reaching that moment of just resting all our hopes on him. Maybe some of us feel a million miles away from doing that for ourselves. Getting to that point where we'd say we're Christians too, we're still just dipping our toes into these things. Christmas. Time to dip again. Maybe we're still questioning. Maybe we're still at the stage of a very strong emotional reaction. And as a result, maybe assuming there's no way this stuff could ever really be for us. Yeah, don't be so sure, this is saying. Just because we're not there yet doesn't mean it's somewhere we will never be. So Mary is thoughtful. It takes her time, but third, do just notice where the journey that she's on ends. There are loads of remarkable things in the passage, but the more I think about Mary's words in verse 38, the more I think they're probably the most remarkable thing there of all. I am the Lord's servant, she answered. May it be to me as you have said. It's quite a thing to say, isn't it? To anyone. Expression of complete surrender to God. And doesn't that fly in the face of how our society encourages us to think and act today? Who is in charge of my life? You are, society tells me. Who gets to decide not just what I do, but who I am? You do, the world around me says. And provided I'm not doing anyone else any harm, how dare anybody else try to interfere with what I might decide? But as Matthew records Mary's words there at the end, he's reminding us true Christian faith does involve complete surrender to God's will. Costly surrender. After all, think about Mary, how in the space of just one conversation, her whole life has been turned completely upside down. All those plans that she must have made, like any bride-to-be, all those dreams about how life with Joseph was going to go, gone like that. Already able to see some of the cost of going God's way. Do you reckon all her friends and family and neighbours would have gone with the whole Holy Spirit coming upon her and power of the Most High overshadowing her explanation for her pregnancy? Yeah, right. Imagine the cost to her reputation in that strictly moral society. And then, of course, all the costs that she couldn't yet see. The day 30-something years later when she'd stand on a hillside just outside Jerusalem and watch this promised child die. I can't imagine how hard that must have been. I worked in the Ministry of Defence before I started working here, and I worked in this little unit where one of the things that would occasionally happen was we'd get called in. No notice to the office because a soldier had been killed overseas in Iraq normally back then. And we had to make sure that the right arrangements were made and that the press was told in a way that made things as easy as possible for the families and so on. And it was heartbreaking imagining what it must have been like for those families getting a knock at the door and seeing someone standing there in uniform and just realising what must have happened. And I remember my military counterpart, who was normally there dealing with it with me, a very, very tough man, a man who'd done all kinds of hard things in Northern Ireland in his time. Just the hardest thing in the world, losing your child, he would always say, shaking his head. Well, Mary didn't just hear about her child dying, she'd watch it. And not just watch him die, but watch him die the worst death of all. As he would take on himself all the curse and the trouble that people like you and me deserve for the way we've rejected God and hurt one another and spoiled this world. So much unseen pain to come. But I'm the Lord's servant, she said. May it be to me as you have said. Don't you see, Matthew says? The faith God seeks does go way beyond just giving him a bit of space in our lives. It goes way beyond giving him a bit of attention once or twice a year. It goes way beyond saying, we'll bear what he says in mind. It involves us saying something like this too. Being willing to obey anything God asks of us in his word and willing to trust him in any circumstances he may send. Which, let's be frank, sounds dangerous, doesn't it? Especially to ears like ours that are increasingly tuned to prick up at the first sound of anything that sounds a bit too extreme. And with some gods, I guess a commitment like that could be a very dangerous thing. Could lead to all kinds of awful things. We hear stories in the news that remind us of that almost every day at the moment. But if we're following in the footsteps of a God like this, who loves us like this, who loves even his enemies so much, he comes to give himself that we might be his friends. with a God who is that committed to our good, surely it makes every sense to surrender ourselves completely to him.